Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Today we're continuing our discussion with Kirsten Hagelin, former Miss America 2008. We're talking about her eating disorder and her experience in Miss America pageant 2008. Kirsten, welcome back today.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we were talking about your eating disorder, but I want to talk a little bit about your experience in the pageant. You've talked a little bit about your experience with ballet and how that kind of shaped some belief systems for you about body image and all that. When did you start getting involved in doing beauty pageants? Because everybody wants to know what that was like.
Of course. I entered my local pageant, which was called Miss Oakland County. That was the county that I grew up in Michigan. I was 17 years old. I had just graduated from high school and was looking to get some scholarship for college. And that is primarily why I decided to enter the competition. Now, of course, I was 17 years old, so I had no clue how much school actually costs. So I thought a couple extra $100 in scholarship was going to help my parents. So that was pretty hilarious now in retrospect. But that was why I decided to compete. I didn't think that I was ever going to win. Otherwise, I wouldn't have decided to compete. I mean, I thought there was absolutely no chance that I'd win. But of course, you don't have to win in order to win any scholarship money. Performing on stage is not a big deal for me. Obviously, I've been doing it since I was a little girl. So I had a talent. I was decided to sing for my talent. And that was pretty easy for me. I had a voice teacher that I worked with at school. So didn't really have to, you know, seek out a vocal coach or anything like that. All that was pretty easy. I decided to wear my senior prom dress for my evening gown. That was the condition upon which my mom bought it for me, was that if I wore it again, I said, fine, I'll wear it in the pageant. So it was, you know, it wasn't really, I didn't really work that hard at it, to be honest. I just entered and I ended up winning. And that was a huge surprise and a shock to me. I was the youngest girl and really wasn't, I think at that time, had no idea what the job was going to be like. And so I went away for my first year of school to the University of Cincinnati, the Conservatory of Music, for musical theater. And so I would be a student on the weekdays, and then I'd come drive back up to Michigan to be Miss Oakland County on the weekends and do appearances and community events and service and little speaking things here and there. But it was really a leadership role. And although it was really scary at first because I had never spoken in front of people, I had never, you know, I wasn't comfortable with that. And I was kind of forced into that role, and I was forced to be kind of a voice for my generation of young people. And at first it was really terrifying. And actually, I'll tell you, the first time that I ever spoke in public was at a 9/11 remembrance ceremony in my community. But when I was asked to go there to show up as Miss Oakland County as an appearance, I was not told that I was going to be speaking.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just invited to, you know, as far as I knew, sit up on stage with the other community dignitaries, the police chief, the fire chief, the mayor, and several city council members. And there was a man standing up the MC at the podium, and he introduced all of the dignitaries sitting on stage. And as he introduced each one, they were going up to the podium to say a few words of, in, you know, remembrance, obviously, of that day. And I was sitting at the very end of the row, and I'm seeing each dignitary being announced and go up to the podium and give their 5 minutes. And I am thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to say something. And it wasn't as though I could just go up and like introduce myself and talk about being Miss Oakland County. I mean, this is a very serious event. And he had to say something profound, and I had no idea what to say. And so, of course, they called my name and said, oh, and Miss Oakland County's here. And I just tried to wave and hope that was going to be it. And of course,
that'll be my 5 minutes.
Right. They said, you want to say a few words? And I was like, you can't be like, no, I'm good. Like everything was said.
No, I'm good.
So I was to walk up to the podium. I had to talk, but you know, on the way up there, I said a little prayer and I tried to think about what 9/11 meant to me. I said, if I try to sound smart, if I try to sound like the mayor, if I try to throw out facts or figures or try to say something really deep, I'm going to sound stupid because I'm just 17 years old. I mean, what can I offer? Well, what I can offer is my own personal experience and the things that I learned about my country and from my family and about unity at that time. So I just went back in my mind to what it was like and I just spoke from my own experience. And that was incredibly powerful because nobody expected from me to hear a mayoral speech. Nobody expected to hear, you know, what the business leader had to say. They expected to hear from a 17-year-old girl. And I really learned in that day, you know, because I got a lot of positive feedback from what I said, and I honestly don't even remember what I said. I was in such a fog. But it was just people were so encouraged by authenticity.
Yeah.
And I really realized then because then, after I won, you know, served as Miss Oakland County, I won Miss Michigan the next summer, totally unexpectedly, youngest girl there, never thought in a million years that I would win. And then obviously 6 months after that, won Miss America again, didn't ever expect to actually win, but it happened. And I really saw the power of just communicating my story authentically. My platform was eating disorders. I started to share my own personal struggle and recovery from an eating disorder. And it was just, you know, there was no expectation on me to be anything more than, you know, what I had experienced. And that was valuable to people. And that was refreshing to people. You know, authenticity from a public figure is really very, very moving and very powerful and really does change lives, I think. And so it was just a practice every day of me being vulnerable before the audiences that I was. And it really kept me on track in my own recovery. And it also really helped to establish the fact that participating in a pageant was about so much more than just winning a pageant. It was about having the opportunity to change lives and change little girls' lives because they are the young girls that, you know, they are the people that look up to Miss America and listen to what she has to say. And so to be able to stand up and tell them, you know, I'm not perfect. I've gone through, you know, big, tough challenges in my life. You don't have to be perfect in order to achieve and go after your dreams, you know, and that you know, beauty is based on so much more than what you look like. I know I've been there. I've hurt myself. I've struggled with things. And now I know that true value and true worth and true beauty lies on the inside, you know? So it became Wow. about much more than just a pageant.
Oh, yeah. That's powerful because, I mean, 17. So you had, by this time, you know, you had come out of recovery then?
Yeah, I was recovered. I was recovered physically. And I am so thankful for the fact that I struggled early and that my parents got me to the doctor because I was able to regain so much of my health, so much of my bone growth because I was at osteopenia when I was first going to the doctor at age 15. I lost so much calcium in my bones. I was mm-hmm. able to get so much of that bone density and growth back to almost normal. You know, I really was able to recover physically in so many wonderful ways that I don't know if I would have been able to if I'd been older or had struggled for longer before I actually got help. But I was recovered physically and I was recovered mentally and emotionally. So far as, like I said, that I had the tools in my tool belt, so to speak. But so much, I mean, life tests you so much, you know, after 17 years old. And, you know, even for people that don't struggle. So there's this constant, you know, having to really say and decide, I'm going to stay recovered. I'm going to stay recovered. I'm going to continue to choose to believe that my life is better now and that I'm not going to solve any problems or difficulties or challenges that I'm faced with by going back to my eating disorder. And so, you know, I mean, life brings us challenges in every step in life that we have to face. And it doesn't matter if we've been through therapy, you know, 30 years ago. I mean, it's still things that, you know, we have to say, evaluate, how am I going to solve this problem? You know, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to manage this pain in my life? And, you know, that's something that you have to deal with the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
Not the eating disorder you have to deal with the rest of your life, but, you know, evaluating how you deal with pain and stress responsibly.
Yes. So, but was there pressure for you being in that environment of a beauty pageant What was the emphasis there? I mean, is it on beauty or is it on, you know, your talent? I mean, but it's still all about performing.
Yeah, it definitely is all about performing, you know, and it's interesting. I didn't really start because I won Miss Oakland County. I came back on the weekend, so I didn't feel a lot of pressure as a local title holder. Then as Miss Michigan, it's a little bit higher scale. You have, you know, I had to leave school to do that job and prepare for Miss America. But still, I had a lot of people around me that were very supportive of me, and I, you know, didn't get a lot of criticism. You know, people were just very, very supportive, and so didn't feel a lot of pressure then. It was really when I, you know, just was going to compete at Miss America and then won that job that I really started to feel a lot of pressure. And, you know, feeling pressure, where does it come from? Is it from outside or is it from inside? Well, really, in the case of Miss America, it's both. You become really a public person, and people will write about you and say things to your face that are just so completely nasty. It's like you become everyone's garbage bin. And,
you know,
they, you know, will say, you know, I had, you know, men tell me that my boobs weren't, you know, that they expected Miss America to have bigger boobs, and
I
shouldn't have cut my hair because I looked better with it long. I mean, you know, and it's not just men. I mean, there's other girls too, women too, the way they look at you or, you know, the nasty comments they make because they're jealous. It just, you start to get that at that higher level of being Miss America. And there is a pressure on beauty. But, you know, I think more too than not just, you know, becomes not just about your physical beauty, it comes about your facial beauty and your hair and, you know, all these other aspects of beauty that I didn't grow up even thinking about because I was in rehearsal clothes all the time, you know.
How did you handle that?
Yeah, you know, at first during the job of Miss America, I was very conscious of it because I wanted to be that people pleaser thing.
Yeah, you're a people pleaser.
I wanted to be the best Miss America that I could be, and I wanted to be all things to all people. But it is such an extreme job that you quickly learn, if you try to stick to that, you will totally crash. You will either crash or you will totally reject that. That's what you either do because you're traveling 20,000 miles a month. You go from hotel to hotel to hotel. I went home 2 times my entire year.
Wow.
And you are just, and your schedule is so packed. You're doing 2 or 3 appearances a day. You're on a plane every 2 to 3 days. Your life is so completely out of your control. And you have so many people that want so many things from you. I mean, there is just no way that you can please everyone. And I quickly saw that I couldn't. And also I just got so, because it's interesting. I'm naturally an introvert. Like I love being around people. I enjoy being around people and all that, but I get my energy from being, you know, being my alone time, you know, my time to recharge and all those things. And you know, your life is so out of your control. And I just quickly realized that I was not going to be able to please everyone. And I had to take care of myself and I had to put myself and my emotional needs first. I had to give myself breaks. I had to do things like that. And I had to not care as much what people thought. Like I literally just had to decide and not to care so much what other people thought of me.
Yeah.
You know, because if I didn't do that, I was going to self-destruct. And, but it was cool because it really gave me a lot of fire, a continued fire and a lot of passion for when I would go in and talk to young girls. And I would share it with them what I was experiencing. You know, I would say, you know, you look up to me as Miss America and think my life is perfect and all these things, but I'll tell you, it's such a tough job. And, you know, this is what I have to do. And this is how much I travel. And this is what some people say about me, you know, and in life, you're going to have people that love you and you're going to have people that can't stand you. Mm-hmm. And you just have to pick up, move on and be confident and be yourself above all, because then you'll have no regrets.
Yeah.
And talking to girls every single day about that really gave me the courage to continue to not put other people on a pedestal, but instead to take care of myself. And, you know, that, you know, I don't think that if I hadn't had the opportunity to speak to as many young women and really taken my job as being a role model seriously, that I would have been able to survive. But, you know, I had great therapy before I won and a great opportunity to speak into the lives of young women. And that really encouraged me to stay strong.
Yeah. Well, what did you notice in the attitudes of the other contestants that you were with in Miss America? Were they totally focused on, you know, being perfect and looking perfect? How did that affect some of the people that you met?
Yeah, you know, there's good apples and bad apples in every bunch, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I competed with some incredible women and some that are still friends to this very day. And actually, when I was crowned, the two or three girls that were standing around me when they announced the winner, and that was me, they were some of my best friends throughout the whole journey.
Wow.
And you really have to surround yourself with positive people, mm-hmm. because, and that's what I tried to do, because there were girls that I made great friends with that were, I'm sure they had their own, you know, self-doubts and insecurities and their own things mentally they were dealing with, but they were mainly positive about the experience and not focused on the, I have to win, I have to be perfect, I have to show no weakness, all of that competitive stuff. They were, you know, there to make friends and there to, you know, do their very best.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of girls that weren't, you know, there was also a lot of girls that were, you know, kind of mean and would take any advantage to say, oh, you're wearing that, you know, like, you know, just things like that. And obviously, you know, that's the way that they're, you know, everyone's insecurities and doubts manifest themselves in a different way. And those girls might've come off as more confident, but probably they were more insecure. And they just, you know, their competitive drive led them to, and their insecurity led them to respond that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, every girl is different. And yeah, there's a lot of pressure. And by the end of the week at Miss America, you know, you can tell there's a lot of girls that just start to fade. Like they've had enough of it. They're tired of it. They don't want to do it anymore. They just, you know, kind of given up because it's such a hard experience. You know, you have to be really, really mentally strong.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was nervous, but I was more nervous because I just wanted to do well on stage. You know, I wanted to perform my talent well. I wasn't nervous about winning. You know, the only thing that I actually wanted, I was like, oh, I just hope I make it into the top 15 so I can do something on stage for all the people that flew across the country to come see me.
did you sing? Know? Was that what you did? You sang?
Yes, I sang. I was a musical theater major in school and sang all my life. So, you know, it was not only was it healthier for me to sing and not, you know, have the pressure of being in tights and a leotard and all of that, but also it's just a much more marketable skill as a Miss America. You can sing national anthems. You can sing in parades. You can sing, you know, it's a much more portable talent when you're on the road all year long, so to speak. So, yeah, I did. I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which was a song I grew up singing from a little girl from my favorite movie in the world, Wizard of Oz. And so it's very emotional and, you know, for me and really cool. And actually my grandmother on my mother's side was Miss Michigan in 1944. And
oh my gosh.
America. Yeah. So she was able to be there and see me crowned. And,
oh, how
that
cool.
That was such a wonderful experience. But I wasn't like too nervous. I mean,
well, I was going to ask you what was the best moment and what was the worst, but maybe that was the best moment.
Probably. I mean, the best moment obviously is when they call your name.
Yeah.
And, obviously, but outside of that, I mean, the whole telecast is just so much fun. You know, there's so much energy, on stage. You're competing with, you know, girlfriends that you've made. And for the last 6 months, you've been working together and living together and, you know, all these, you know, things. And, you know, so that's so much fun. And, there's nothing like a live audience when you're on stage. I mean, all that, just the adrenaline rush is so awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But obviously winning is the best because you realize you have this incredible job for the whole year. But the worst part, I would say, the worst part is waiting to answer your final question, I would say.
Oh, really? What was your question?
Yeah. Oh, my question was so easy. I mean, it was so easy. It was, or obvious, I guess you should say. They asked, and I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but I think this was basically what it was. And that was, should you be required to tell your future spouse whether or not you have an STD or are HIV positive?
What?
Like, of course. and I didn't say, duh, of course. I said, yes, absolutely. And it's not that it should be required of you, but it's that you want to do it out of mutual respect for your partner, because that's what's going to build a long-term relationship and a marriage that is strong.
So you don't get any, heads up on the questions. It's just like,
no,
nothing.
No, they're just random, political, controversial, stuff. And for me, I thought that question was pretty easy and I was pretty lucky, but you know, I mean, it's tough because you don't know what they're going to throw at you and you have a very short time to answer. So you need to be concise and to the point, and it's difficult.
Yeah.
Obviously we've seen that can be a stumbling block for many contestants.
Yeah, make it or break it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think about beauty pageants anyway? Like, after all the pressure, after all you've been through, you know, just with your own body image issues, with the, you know, having been, you know, having a dream to do ballet, being in these beauty pageants, being aware of the cultural pressures and just absolutely what you speak about to young women.
Right.
Do you think it's wrong to have beauty pageants? Is it just encouraging all this mess?
In a perfect world, I don't think that they're necessary in a perfect world, but we don't live in a perfect world.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the pageant was incredibly empowering because through the job, and I shouldn't say through the pageant, because the pageant is a show. I mean, it's a pageant, like whoop-de-doo, you know? But the job of Miss America helped me to find my voice, and it helped me to put the stamp on my recovery like I would not have if I had not had the opportunity to stand up in front of audiences, share my own story, and learn the incredible worth of a challenge and a struggle that you've dealt with in your life, and that is to help other people that are going through the same thing and encourage and inspire them. That is the reason that we go through trials in our lives.
Yeah.
I saw my mom do that with her own breast cancer. She then became an advocate and a parish nurse. She was already a nurse, but she worked with our congregation in coordinating doctor's visits for women that were diagnosed with breast cancer, doing counseling for them, finding counseling for them, resources, prayer ministry for them. I saw my mom do that for others, and that's an incredible service to go through life with other people that are dealing with the same thing you dealt with.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have gotten that if I had not been in the pageant. So they are incredibly empowering for the girls that compete, because they're not just about a swimsuit, an evening gown, and a talent. They're about choosing a platform, preparing for an interview to be tested on what you believe about that issue and about everything else in the world. And then if you win, having to go out and speak and be a public person on this issue of advocacy that you've chosen. And those things, they force you to have opinions. They force you to stand up and say what you believe with conviction and support it. And that is something that girls really need.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, girls are not challenged enough to say what they think, be able to support it. And when they are faced with criticism, be able to continue that conversation, come back and support themselves and, you know, retain their sense of self. And it's just such incredible training. But I hate the swimsuit competition. I don't think it needs to exist. I think it's horrible. But I also think that we don't need a Victoria's Secret fashion show on television. And we don't need 10-foot-high, you know, billboards of half-naked women, you know, mm-hmm. going down the freeway or in a big city. You know, I don't think we need that either. But, you know, am I a prude? Maybe. But, I've been in a highly sexualized event like that. And now, when that I'm married and, you know, children are 5 years down the road, and I think of my little girls, and I want them to believe and not get like just saturated with this belief that they have to be a sexual object in order to be worth anything. So do I wish that that was gone? You bet.
Wow. Do the thoughts still creep up on you?
It depends on which thoughts. Do thoughts of rigidity, perfectionism, people pleasing creep up? Oh yeah. I mean, yes, they do.
How about body image?
Body image issues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every once in a while. But I catch them, like, I know, I'm like, huh, that's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then move on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like every once in a while, you know, I've always had, like so many women have, you know, problem things in their body that, you know, areas that they don't like. And so every once in a while, you know, a thought will come up about the area that I don't like, or I always had insecurities. And I'm like, yeah, but really, I feel I'm young. I have energy. I treat my body well. I do all these things, like, I love my body. I'm so thankful for my body, and I move on.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in obsessing over it, because I know, and this thought is still very clearly in my brain, that even in the depths of my eating disorder, I wasn't happy in my body, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the point?
So you can kind of switch that up. Yeah. And just cultivate an attitude of gratefulness and see what,
yeah.
you know, I can be grateful that I have a body. I'm healthy. There's, you know, so-and-so over here is in a wheelchair.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And you really learn not to compare. And that's one of the things that is the most helpful. And I think for women in cultivating a good body image is you cannot compare yourself to other women. I mean, you just cannot.
Yeah.
You just can't. You have to make a decision not to. And compare yourself in your body, compare yourself in your success professionally or otherwise. You cannot compare yourself. Everyone's on a different journey, and you have no idea what that woman went through to get where she is, or what insecurities or doubts she may be having, or what else is going on in her life. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Until you get
don't
there.
Don't compare.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tell us about your foundation.
Sure. After my years Miss America, I wanted to continue to give back to the eating disorder field in some way, and obviously wanted to continue traveling and speaking, which I do, but wanted to do something tangibly to give back. And obviously one of the greatest needs that I saw was funding for treatment. I mean, there are various levels of care, but so many of them, you know, people that struggle, they can't afford a lot of good treatment, or their insurance doesn't cover enough of it, or will cover a certain amount of days or weeks, and then we'll stop covering them. And so families, you know, just really were desperate for some kind of help. And so I set out to fundraise to provide treatment scholarships for young women. And we started in 2009, the Kirsten Hagelin Foundation, and we have done quite a bit of fundraising. We started funding residential treatment scholarships and worked with several different treatment centers. Timberline Knowles was the first, actually, one that gave us a 30-day scholarship. And we've worked with several others, and they've been really wonderful. And now we've realized that we can help more girls if we fund varying levels of care. So now we fund some outpatient. We also fund some, PHP programs or nutritional therapy or group therapy or transitional living. Now it just kind of depends on the girl who comes to us and depending on what her needs are. So we've been able to do that for the last, I guess, 5 years now.
Wow.
And really just have been trying to assist families in finding resources. And even if we don't, because every time we get a chunk of change and help a girl, help a family. And even if, you know, so obviously that leads to a lot of times people will come to us and, you know, we, you know, funds are low until the next time that, you know, we have a fundraiser or we get resources in again. And even if we can't help that person financially, we talk with the family, we try to find resources in the area. We've helped people do fundraisers themselves before, because sometimes people, they say, I have no money, but they don't realize that they could do a fundraiser, or they could plug into their community, or they could plug into their church, or, you know, some other avenues in order to find or assemble resources or people that believe in you and want to help. They just don't know how to cultivate that because they're just so at their emotional end of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So we try to help them do that as if we don't have the resources to support.
Wow. Kirsten, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. I so appreciate it. It was wonderful. Blessings to all you put your hands on, and hope you'll come back next year and be with us again and let us know what you're up to.
Of course. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
God bless.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.